You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Bob Alper, Jewish comedian extraordinaire, headliner of the upcoming celebration Purim for Grownups at Congregation Beit Simcha. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us online at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Purim's coming up this week, Saturday night and Sunday, March 23rd and 24th, bringing joy and hamantashen to all of our lives. While Purim is the silliest of all Jewish holidays, and in many ways the most fun, it's often neglected, sadly, by adults as being, oh, it's just a kid's festival. That's a shame, because the truth is we need our religious life to be both serious and meaningful and fun, if not always at the same time. Judaism has always understood this and incorporated into its annual calendar both the overwhelming seriousness of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and the ridiculous frivolity of Purim, the Feast of Esther. And in a subtle way, it's chosen to make them polar opposites, twin festivals almost exactly 6 months apart, half a year, completely reversing the traditions of the one with the other and the practices, too. The parallels, or rather the reversals, are very interesting, beginning with their placement on the calendar, one at the start of the fall, the other half a year away at the start of the spring. They include food, dress, music, and seriousness in just opposite ways. On Yom Kippur, we fast. We don't eat. On Purim, we feast. We eat a lot. On Yom Kippur, we are deeply serious. On Purim, we revel and are as silly as possible. On Yom Kippur, we dress all in white. On Purim, we dress in costumes of every color and construction and description. On Yom Kippur, we pray all day. On Purim, we perform plays and parodies, have carnivals and celebrations, play games of chance. On Yom Kippur, we do not drink at all, not even water. On Purim, we're commanded even to drink alcohol, ad delo yada, until we can't tell the difference between the evil Haman and the good guy Mordechai. On Yom Kippur, there is music of great power and sanctity, like the Kol Nidre. On Purim, there's, oh, today we'll merry, merry be. If holidays were human beings, Yom Kippur would be Mother Teresa. Purim would be Seth Rogen. Now, these two holidays couldn't be any more different, and both still be Jewish, yet oddly, the mystics saw in Purim a similarity to Yom Kippur. They noted Yom Kippur, called in Hebrew Yom HaKippurim, could be translated as the day like Purim. And that's true enough. Not only Kabbalists, mystics, saw it this way, so did the noted anti-mystic, the Vilna Gaon. The reasoning of these great minds on the subject is certainly complicated. One rabbi wrote, "We would assume that Yom Kippur is the greater of the 2 days, but in one sense, Purim is even greater. It's easier to achieve spiritual elevation on a day like Yom Kippur, when we pray and have no time for forbidden activities like gossip or getting angry. By fasting, the soul achieves dominance over the body." Ah, but on Purim, in our state of rambunctious drunkenness, it's much harder to maintain human dignity. No kidding. If one attains holiness through affliction, and another attains holiness through indulgence, who is the greater of the two? It may be said that the one who attains holiness through indulgence is greater, for the attainment of holiness through indulgence requires an infinitely greater degree of striving and effort. In this way, the challenge of Purim is greater. Literally translated, Yom HaKippurim is only a day like Purim. Okay. Frankly, scholars, I don't buy it. To me, Purim is sacred because Judaism understands we are all full human beings, physical and spiritual, and people need humor and joy at least as much as they need serious introspection. Purim comes to teach us that even the Holy Blessed One likes a good party now and then. Like all other springtime festivals, whether they're called Mardi Gras, Spring Fling, Carnival, or even Rodeo, Purim is fun, a great way to usher in the end of winter with a wild, over-the-top, rambunctious celebration. Inhibitions are out. Revelry for a night and day is in. It's as though we've been good for so long, we must let down our hair, change clothes, really celebrate. There's a 9-word summary of every Jewish festival from Hanukkah through Pesach. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. And on Purim, we add drink. Pure, irresponsible fun, right? But there's also something more profound going on at Purim than just a good time. I mean, of course there is. There's a famous joke that says that on Purim, we Jews dress up and pretend to be non-Jews. And on Yom Kippur, we dress up and pretend to be Jews. Purim is here to remind us that Judaism, our own Judaism, your Judaism, can be, should be enjoyable and meaningful. That being Jewish is a gift and a blessing and a rollicking good time. Even in times of distress and challenge, like now in Israel and the Jewish world, we need to find humor and joy. I must add that Purim has often been a time of liberation from Tzoras, at least temporarily. I remember when the first Gulf War, when Israel was being hit by Saddam Hussein's Scud missiles and had to sit quietly, lest it upset the coalition assembled by the first George Bush, ended just in time for Purim. So, what's that old joke, slightly updated? The head Iranian mullah, Ali Khamenei, goes to a mystic to find out his future. He wants to know on what day he will die. And the mystic tells him, "You will die on the Jewish holiday of Purim." "Why are you so sure of that?" Khamenei asks the mystic. "Because any day that you die, it will be the holiday of Purim." In any generation, in every generation, there is never a shortage of those who choose irrationally to hate Jews. And so there's always a reason to celebrate our victory over anti-Semitism, whether back in the days of Mordechai and Esther long ago or, well, a victory we could use today. And so to play us in for Purim, coming up Saturday and Sunday, don't miss our Purim celebrations at Beit Simcha. We chant the Megillah Saturday night at 7 p.m. and Purim for Grownups, our fabulous celebration next Sunday night at 6:30 p.m. with our guest this morning, comedian Rabbi Bob Alper. Well, to play us in, here's the Maccabees classic Purim parody of Jewish singer Pink's "Raise Your Glass," and that didn't need much changing for Purim, frankly.
Stand for a tale so grand. Shushan is the place where it all began, the hidden miracle. One man, second in command, slay all the Jews with his wicked plan, a scheme so miserable. He chose a day for the disaster. It's ironic what came after. He didn't know a girl named Esther would turn it upside down. So raise your glass if you can see the hidden meaning. It's right in front of you. We will never be, never be anything but proud to tell the story. Then out of who? Won't you come on and raise your glass? Just come on and raise your glass.
Esther became the queen, cause God was pulling strings from behind the scenes. She wore the royal crown. 3 days the Jews just prayed. Queen Esther risked her life, went to save the day. She took Haman down. The streets were filled with celebration. Everyone ate Hamantaschen. Jubilation for the nation. Chanti Elamu.
So raise your glass if you can see the hidden meaning.
So get your costumes on. Make noise and drown out our mind. Don't drink like a fool. And remember, and remember, remember what the day's about. So raise your glass if you see God in hidden places. He's right in front of you. We will never be, never be anything more proud to tell our story, be no half a clue.
So raise your glass if you can see the hidden meaning. It's right in front of you. We will never be, never be anything but proud to tell the story. Won't you come on and raise your glass? Just come on and raise your glass. Won't you come on and raise your glass? Just come on and raise your glass. Purim.
That was the Maccabees version of Pink's Raise Your Glass for Purim. Don't miss Purim for Grownups at Beit Simcha. Comedian Rabbi Bob Alper's our headliner, coming up next Sunday night, March 24th at 6:30 p.m. Get your tickets now at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our guest this morning is comedian Rabbi Bob Alper, headliner of Purim for Grownups next Sunday at Beit Simcha. Meet Bob Alper when we come back in a moment, right here on Too Jewish. We welcome our guest this morning. Rabbi Bob Alper has the distinction of being the only rabbi funny enough to make a living as a stand-up comedian, at least since Jackie Mason, Alav HaShalom, passed away. He is a wonderful comedian. He's headlining our Purim for Grown-Up show here at Beit Simcha in Tucson, coming up on March 24th. He is touring the country and has been on, he's a regular on Sirius XM, has been pretty much everywhere and done everything. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Good to talk to you again, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Me too. Bob, I have to tell you, I don't think I've told you this offline, but my middle son, who has a wonderful day job working for Ingram Micro that pays more than I made in my mid-40s, does stand-up comedy six nights a week. So I say the only thing a Jewish parent can say in these circumstances, don't give up the day job.
So I call doing stand-up comedy a healthy addiction. I'm just reading Jerry Seinfeld's book where he talks about, you know, he's a billionaire, but he goes to comedy clubs and he tries out material in front of small crowds and he loves it. And it is, it's such a thrill when you can do it and not go down the toilet, which that's not so much fun. But to get up there on stage, I love performing in front of 1,000 people, and before 18 people, it's the same thrill.
It's fascinating. Like I would think that it's like climbing on a high wire without a net. There's nobody else there.
Exactly. You are totally naked. You nailed it, because, you know, when you're with a band, you can say, I'm having trouble. We'll let the drummer take over. Or no one's going to notice my mistakes when five of us are. But when you're by yourself, you're it. And you sink or swim.
What was the first joke you ever told? Do you remember?
First of all, let me read you a quote that I have on my desk. I don't know who wrote it, but it's been called the loneliest place in the world. It's the only thing people fear as much as death itself. Most who try it fail. But for those who succeed, it's awesome. So that's what stand-up is. The first joke, and this is absolutely true, I remember this. When I was a kid, growing up in Providence, the word we used for our rear end was not fanny, not tuchus. In our family, we called it a tutu. I don't know why. But we called it a tutu. And a babysitter came to the house. She said, does anyone want to go to the park? One kid said, I want to go. And my sister said, I want to go too. And I can remember saying, I want to go too. And I say to the audience, you may not think that's so hysterical, but I remember thinking at that very moment, I am one funny toddler.
Well, we'll see how you have matured over the years. And we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish with comedian Rabbi Bob Alper. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community striving every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation, northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for Shabbat services in person or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is going for school-aged children and grandchildren. Our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. Coming up fast, next Sunday night, March 24th, Purim for Grownups with nationally renowned comedian Rabbi Bob Alpers at 6:30 p.m., a fabulous night of humor, music, gambling, hamantash, and drinks, and Purim joy. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., Shabbat morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m., services at 10 a.m. All of our services are on Facebook, and our classes are available on Zoom. You can go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. Our classes range from mysticism to Torah to, well, just about everything Jewish. Our wonderful religious school is available also online. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school and Torah Tikes, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of adult education academy courses, live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person or on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and most dynamic Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you've got a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish, where you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So you're not only an expert on the international Jewish scene, but you know a lot about the international scene, the international aid scene, non-governmental organizations, the UN, a lot of those. What seemed to me as a layperson, I know I'm a rabbi, that makes me a clergy, not a layperson, but a layperson in this area, a very confusing array of organizational connections and roles, and I guess I don't understand it all.
It is confusing, but it's also quite simple. I will do my best to explain it in simple terms that anybody can grasp. So I have particular experience with this because I worked for an intergovernmental organization called the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which is created by a treaty, the Helsinki Final Act, and has legal standing as an international organization, not an NGO. But it fostered participation of NGOs in all kinds of projects and events that were aimed at strengthening civil society, particularly in the countries transitioning from the former Soviet Union to newly independent states. And so we'd have these meetings where some people sat in frosty silence, others represented NGOs and felt they were being like observed and maybe censored by their government's representatives at these meetings. But I guess there are three distinct entities. There are governmental organizations, there are UN agencies and sub-agencies and bureaus and programs, which are, at the very least, what we call quangos, quasi-non-governmental organizations. And then there are non-governmental organizations.
Which are quangos?
Quangos. Okay. Q-U-A-N-G-O.
Quasi. Okay, got it.
Right. Quasi-NGOs. So examples of NGOs include stuff like that's very well established and very old, like the International Committee for the Red Cross, for example. That's an NGO. Doctors Without Frontiers is also an NGO. The World Food Program is an NGO. But sometimes some of these agencies, like the World Food Program or like Doctors Without Frontiers, work hand in hand with UN agencies that are trying to provide relief, but they're the foot soldiers because the UN doesn't have a lot of foot soldiers. The UN has a huge array of specialized agencies, particularly in and around Geneva. And it's a historic anomaly that can be explained. All of your listeners who remember what used to be called the League of Nations that was created by President
Woodrow Wilson right,
in the aftermath of World War One, the
right.
14 points. Okay.
The League.
The League of Nations was eventually dissolved because it was ineffective, and it was replaced by the United Nations.
With a little World War II in between.
Right. But the old building of the League of Nations, which sits on very choice territory overlooking the Lake of Geneva, became the Palais des Nations, the Palace of the Nations. And a lot of UN specialized agencies like the UN Economic Commission for Europe. Whoever heard of that? Well, most Americans haven't, because its sole purpose is to help countries in transition make the transition from a centrally managed economy to a free market economy. So now that, for example, that UNECE works hand in glove with a lot of non-governmental organizations. And let's talk maybe next week about the interactions between UN organizations, government organizations, and non-governmental organizations during time of crisis, during normal times, dealing with a specific problem, whatever that might be. It's very interesting to see how these organizations do and do not interact.
Absolutely, Tom. Doesn't sound all that simple to me, as you said. To you, it's simple, but I really appreciate the clarification. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A slightly past middle-aged Jewish woman is sitting on a park bench in Florida when a similarly aged man sits down next to her. "Excuse me," she says, "are you new here? I don't think I've seen you before." And the guy says, "Actually, this is my first day in Florida." "Did you move here from New York?" she asks. "Where did you live before you came here?" "Well, ma'am, I just got out of prison," he answers. "Oh," she says, "how long were you in there?" 20 years, the guy says. And what were you in prison for? The Jewish woman asks. I was sent to prison for murdering my wife, he answers. Ah, she says, so you're single. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin the middle book of the Torah, Leviticus. The Hebrew name for the book comes from its first word, Vayikra, God called. It's a text filled with ritual observances and rites designed to create and nurture sanctity. But it begins in an interesting way. There's a famous idiosyncrasy about the Aleph, the last Hebrew letter in the very first word of the book, Vayikra, as it's written in the Torah, because it is written much smaller than the other letters of the word. Aleph, the Midrash tells us, the first letter of the word Ani, I. Therefore, if we wish God to call to us directly, we must diminish our focus on the I, seek to limit our egotism by making our Aleph small. If we can do that, then we, like Moses, will be able to clearly hear God's call to respond, and so to find the holiness that makes up the central subject of the book of Vayikra, Leviticus. Less of the I, and so more of God. Only when we diminish the centrality of our self-absorption will we allow God in. Leviticus focuses on the way our ancestors worshiped God through animal sacrifices, korbanot. For the past, 1950 years, ever since the destruction of the Second Temple in Jerusalem, prayer and study and acts of charity and repentance have replaced sacrifice. These are all ways to open ourselves to God and diminish our emphasis on the I, on the self. The great English author and poet D.H. Lawrence wrote a fascinating poem on the subject of sacrifice. The old idea of sacrifice was this, he wrote, the blood of the lower life must be shed for the feeding and strengthening of the handsome, fuller life. Oh, when the old world sacrificed a ram, it was to the gods who make us splendid, and was for a feast of meat, for men and maids on a day of splendor, for the further splendor of men. It was the eating up of little lives, even doves, even small birds, into the dance and splendor of a bigger life. There is no such thing as sin. There is only life and anti-life. And sacrifice is the law which enacts that little lives must be eaten up into the dance and splendor of bigger lives with due reverence and acknowledgement. Lawrence's poem is powerful, but it states the opposite of the Jewish understanding of sacrifice. Sacrifice in the Torah was a way to accept not that smaller lives would be given over for the sake of our more important lives. Instead, sacrifice was a method to connect us to the fact that our own existence is holy only when we offer something of ourselves to God. By giving up something, perhaps no more than a bit of our own self-importance and ego, we can give our lives meaning and sanctity, holiness. When we return in a moment on Too Jewish, our guest, the delightful Rabbi Bob Alper, explains how he became a Jewish comedian full-time and what's great about his unique brand of Jewish humor featured in Beit Simcha's Purim for Grown-Up Celebration, Sunday night, March 24th at 6:30. Meet Bob again when he rejoins us in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
As usual, I wish the news were better. First, in Texas, more than 80 bands and several scheduled panelists, especially ones from Ireland, by the way, pulled out of the South by Southwest festival, citing Israeli defense ties among the organizers. The organizers of the Austin, Texas event, which draws attendees from around the world, threatened legal action against the boycott's leaders, but they also said they fully respect the boycott. The protest was sparked by the Austin for Palestine Coalition, which called for a boycott of the festival due to the fact that its sponsors include the U.S. Army and the weapons manufacturers RTX Corporation, Collins Aerospace, and BAE Systems. The South by Southwest Festival was held last week. This Palestinian coalition argued that because the U.S. military and defense contractors supply Israel with weapons and technology, RTX, for example, supplies major components of the Iron Dome missile defense system, which shoots down the rockets that Palestinian terrorists fire at Israelis all the time, that somehow boycotting the festival will show solidarity with Palestinians. No more war profiteers and warmongers in this city, the coalition posted. The boycotting acts represent a small fraction of the bands booked for South by Southwest. This year, there were more than 2,000 bands, including headliners like the Black Keys, Bootsy Collins, and Chiaki Mayumara. But the boycott comes as the arts and cultural world is roiled by tensions surrounding the Israel-Hamas war. Three venues canceled shows by the terrific Jewish musician Matisyahu the last few weeks, including the Rialto Theater right here in Tucson. Feel free not to go there because of pro-Palestinian terrorism protests. Jewish authors and museum executives have reported being targeted by anti-Semitism as a result of pro-Palestinian terrorist activism in their fields. Meanwhile, Jewish director Jonathan Glazer ignited a firestorm with his Oscars speech last week criticizing the war while he accepted the award. So about Jonathan Glazer and the Oscars. His remarkable film, The Zone of Influence, about the banality of evil Nazis living happily next door to Auschwitz, is based on Martin Amis's book. Glazer's film won the Oscar as Best International Film. I think it used to be foreign language, but now it's international. In his acceptance speech, Glazer said, as he stood there flanked by his Jewish co-producers, "Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people." Well, that preposterous speech set off a firestorm. Another previous Oscar-winning British producer, Richard Trank, also Jewish, also the producer of a remarkable story about the Holocaust, wrote movingly, "Upon hearing Glazer's words, I thought about the assistant camera operator who has worked on three of my films, whose 79-year-old father was kidnapped by Palestinian terrorists October 7th. This man had been spending his retirement years volunteering to drive Gazans needing medical care into Israel, care which Hamas would not provide for them, despite billions of dollars in aid that has been sent to the area since the terrorist organization took control of it in 2006. I thought about the young people I have met in the last few weeks who survived the massacre at the Nova Music Festival. And then I reflected on this incredibly arrogant man who equated Israeli Jews to Nazis and then left the Dolby Theater in L.A. with his statue when the awards show ended to party the night away." Trank continued, "Now that the after parties from the Oscars are over, I have a few questions for the celebrated filmmaker. Can you explain the dramatic anti-Semitism around the world since Hamas invaded Israel October 7th, an act its leaders have promised to do again and again? Can you help me understand how on International Women's Day, women's groups largely ignored how Jewish women were sexually abused by Hamas? Can you give me an idea as a British citizen," Trank said, "why British Jews in recent polls have said that if they could, they'd leave the UK because of the onslaught of Jew hatred they've been facing since October 7th? How have the streets of central London become a no-go zone for Jews every weekend because of massive anti-Israel demonstrations held by pro-Palestinian protesters? To be frank, nobody in Israel is triumphant or celebrating the war in Gaza. This war was forced on Israel. Israelis, universally see it as a necessity to eradicate the power of Hamas and its very unbanal and oft-stated evil intentions to annihilate Israel and to commit genocide on all Jews. Israel is trying to break Hamas's vicious stranglehold on Gaza and the 2.3 million Palestinians living under its terrorizing control. Now, the pro-Palestinian terrorist tools, funded by Qatar and Iran, who are disrupting civilized life around the world now? Well, these people are beyond misguided. They are perpetrating anti-Semitic acts as they seek the destruction of the only Jewish nation on the planet. They are urging the boycott of Jewish-owned businesses, you know, just like Nazis did, forcing Jewish performers and creative artists out of the public view, making our college campuses and now our city council meetings into classrooms for the perpetration of race hatred. That's just anti-Semitism. Oh, and by the way, aiding evil and publicizing it is also evil. And that surely applies to these virulent anti-Semites, including the arrogant, self-hating Jews, sadly. Last week, rock pop musician Eric Carmen died. His soft rock and power ballads were unavoidable for a while in the 70s and 80s. A Jewish Cleveland native, he was best known for his top 10 hits, All By Myself and Never Gonna Fall In Love, for composing the song Almost Paradise from the movie Footloose. He also sang the hit Hungry Eyes from the movie Dirty Dancing. Carmen's first two hits had an unusual origin for pop tunes in his classical musical training. Both were derived from compositions by Sergei Rachmaninoff. I don't think either can be said to be improvements on the original, but still. Carmen's first group to record hits was called the Raspberries, and while it didn't have the success of his later solo career, it was cited as an influence by artists like Bruce Springsteen, Tom Petty, and Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses. The Raspberries' best song, certainly their biggest hit, was called Go All the Way. It managed to pay tribute back in 1972 to The Who, The Beatles, and The Beach Boys all in one song. It was used fairly recently in the movie Guardians of the Galaxy. Talented guy, Eric Carmen. Baruch Dayan Haemet. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, a good friend, Rabbi Bob Alper, who is definitely the funniest rabbi on the circuit. Now, the competition is slim.
Thank goodness.
All rabbis think they can tell jokes. They also all think they can sing. You know, mostly they're not right about either one. Just remember this great scene in one of my favorite movies, my favorite year, in which the lead tells the girl he's trying to impress, oh, anybody can tell jokes. And he tells her a joke and she tries to tell it back and she fails. Can anyone tell a joke?
In telling a joke is really acting. And I don't know if everyone can be an actor, but there are elements of telling a joke that people don't realize. You know, Steve Martin has a line, he says, the enemy of comedy is distraction. So if you're, even if you're a good joke teller, you're telling a joke and something happens behind you, it's not going to work, but it's not your fault. On the other hand, some people, you know, a lot of people tell jokes and they don't know how to do it. They don't prepare. They think they can just riff it off. And often you'll hear people tell jokes. When I hear them, I think, I could tell that same, it took him 2.5 minutes to tell that joke. I could tell it in 17 seconds.
And get a better laugh, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, language is critical You know, I'm working on a joke right now that I'm taking syllable after syllable out. And I'll tell you the joke. I'll probably use it when I'm down in
Please.
I live in Vermont. People know that. So I say, Vermont is the whitest state in the Union. When my friend Terrell came to visit, as he drove across the state line, Vermont's black population doubled.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm working on it. You know, other jokes, I'll be in the middle of my act, and I'll think, gosh, I could take away two syllables. You know, I'll do an hour and a half of comedy, and that moment will be the highest moment for me, because it's always a question of edit. But rabbis, you know, one of the things I'm up against is people, they know rabbis who think they're funny, and they think, how funny could Albert be? Let's not bring him in. And a lot of rabbis will tell jokes like, okay, boys and girls, what was the name of Isaiah's horse? You don't know? Well, it was Toothy, because Isaiah is always quoted as saying, whoa, Toothy.
That's terrible. Yeah, that's really awful. I'm sorry.
It's and that ruins it.
You know, people think that comedy is universal, but that's not exactly true. Some things are funny to some people, some things are funny to other people. How do you judge an audience?
I'm at the point now, after all these years, my material works for everyone. You know, I rarely make any changes. I know it's going to work. I'll insert a new joke somewhere along the way, and the audience doesn't know it's a new joke. And if I get a 4 on the laugh-o-meter, I'll work on it and see if I can get it better. If I get a good laugh, I'll keep in the act. And if I don't get that, I'll never use it again. But most of my material, time-tested. So, you know, whether it's an all-Jewish audience or a mixed audience, or, you know, I performed a Muslim fest in Toronto years ago.
Right.
All the material works.
A little bit of a tougher question. You've performed with a Muslim comedian for years, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure you're the only rabbi to headline a Muslim festival. How has that changed for you since October 7th?
It's a question mark. We haven't done any shows since then. I just got an inquiry from a college about doing the show, and I wrote back. I said, are you sure? These are terrible, terrible, terrible times.
Yeah.
And I think we need this, but I think it's way too early to even think about it. And I have big question marks. That's whether it would work or not. You see, even politicians are getting screamed at, and the yelling was, and people on every side are nervous, upset, devastated. So I don't know if this is the time for that. And I hope someday we can revive it. But right now, no.
God willing and inshallah, you know.
Yeah. When I did Muslim Fest, I had a great opening. Got on the stage in front of 2,000 Muslims in Toronto. I looked at the audience and said, I feel really strange here. So alone. I mean, totally out of place. I said, think of it. All of you are Canadians and I'm American.
I bet it worked too.
It worked. It was great. It really did. It was a good show. You know, afterwards, the little kids want my autograph. They selfies. It was a thrill.
There's a phone number thing you wanted to tell me about. The last 4 digits of your phone number are like 4444. I'm not giving out the rest.
Right.
Can you tell that story?
Yeah. When I got my new cell phone number years ago, the number, I looked up, you know, the last 7 digits. There's a website where you can put in all your phone number, and it'll tell you if you can make any words out of it. You know, like, you know, call Saul or something like that.
Right.
Lawyers have gone on. And I put my numbers in, and I'm not making this up. It came out to be evil Jew. And I said, I can't have
this. Well, it's a lot better than like 666 or something at the end, right? I mean, it could be more dangerous.
So could I have something? Can I have another number? She said, of course. I said, you know, I'm getting older. It's hard for me to remember. Can I have a repeating digit? And so she gave me the last 4444, which reminds me of Joan Rivers imitating the Queen of England. You know, 4444.
Yeah.
That was my number. And
Another comedy question. Richard Lewis, Alav HaShalom, just died recently. Had him on 2 Jewish years ago. His comedy was unique. It was just sort of stream of consciousness neuroses. Are there genre comic? Like, how do you decide who you are?
I guess you fall into, hopefully you fall into what reflects you, your essence, and what you're comfortable doing. And I think Richard Lewis was the kind of comedian who, and it looked like stream of consciousness. I would venture that every word was ticked, but that was his presentation. I loved him. I was at when he was in Robin Hood Men in Tights. My wife and I were on a whitewater rafting trip, and the night before we took off, we were in Lewiston, Idaho, at a packed movie theater watching Robin Hood Men in Tights. And at a certain point where Cary Elwes, who plays Robin Hood, walks into a banquet and has a boar on his shoulders, which he throws onto the table in front of Richard Lewis, who plays the prince. And Richard Lewis, the boar hits the table, and Richard Lewis jumps back and yells, "Trafe!" My wife and I screamed with laughter, and ours were the only voices in the theater.
I've often wondered, like, not only how did Richard Lewis, but how do Mel Brooks movies play in, you know, Lewiston, named after Richard Lewis, Idaho? Like,
I think just they play well, but things are missed.
Yeah, I expect so.
People don't get it.
You know, we used to say that there was only two ways to be a comedian in America. You had to be Jewish or you had to be black. That's no longer true, right?
But we had a good run there. In a monopoly. But we're still there.
So, you know, people think the Jews control the media or Hollywood, but that was wrong. We just controlled comedy for like 50 years.
Right. Talk about this when I lecture on comedy. You know, there are all kinds of reasons for Jews loving comedy, and one is Mel Brooks has a great line. He said, "If somebody's if you can make somebody laugh, the chances are less that they'll choke you to death."
Yes, it saves your life. Comedy, salvation. Who knew that they were the same thing?
There's a show called Too Jewish on Broadway. I'm sure you know.
I know the creator. I think I had her on. It made it to Broadway. I thought it was still off Broadway. It shows I should have paid more attention.
But here's my story. We went to New York and I wanted to see it. And I wanted to call the theater to get tickets. So I called the number and I was one digit off. It's verifiable because the New York Times printed this story. I called the number. I was one digit off. And then somebody said, "Hello." And I said, "Hello, is this Too Jewish?" They said, "No, this is the New York Athletic Club." Which for years was restricted.
Restricted, yeah.
Yeah. So, is this Too Jewish? No, it's the New York Athletic Club.
In the interest of full disclosure, you told me this story by email, but when you're staying here in Tucson for the March 24th show here, we booked you into a hotel that was historically restricted. I said, "I love to put rabbis there now." And you told a story. Can you share that story? It's so great.
So it's a story of a woman, a Jewish woman, with a kind of a white bread name, you know, not a Jewish name. Books herself into a restricted hotel. She's having a wonderful time sitting by the pool, and a busboy walks by, and he trips, and he falls, and he pushes her into the pool. She goes under the water, comes out of the water, and yells, "Oy vey," whatever that means.
I love that joke for some reason. Your comedy ranges, but when you're telling Jewish jokes, what are there a couple of elements that it depends on, do you think, in the construction of a Jewish joke?
I have to think about that. There's often more, maybe a little more irony in a Jewish joke. Maybe the subject matter is more Jewish. One joke, for example, that I love telling really talks about these times, but it's from a 1950 Israeli joke book about a couple are in their apartment and there's an air raid. So they're racing out of the apartment to go into the shelter, and the husband turns around and goes back. She said, "Where are you going?" He said, "To get my dentures." She says, "What do you think they're dropping? Sandwiches?"
Yeah, it's kind of a dark humor, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? It's just as relevant right now as it was in the 1950s, unfortunately. What's the oldest joke that you still tell?
Maybe jokes that my father taught me. I mean, there's one he loved telling about a Hussin went down to Birmingham, to Alabama on business, to his suppliers and his business. And he's in a small train station, sitting there waiting for his train. And he's wearing his black coat, black hat, beard, pants, reading a Yiddish newspaper. And the children are walking around him, pointing and talking to each other. And they look quizzical. And finally, he couldn't take it anymore. He takes the thing, he throws it down, and says, "So what's the matter? You've never seen a Yankee before." So my father told that joke. And years later, I became friendly with a man from Pilsen, Czechoslovakia. And he would send me jokes that he would translate from a pre-World War I German-Jewish joke book. And one of the jokes he sent me was about how a man from Czechoslovakia went to Paris, Jewish man, he's sitting in the park reading a Yiddish paper. And then the punchline is, so what's the matter? You've never seen a Czechoslovakian before?
Oh my God, it's the same joke. Incredible.
I'm sure it goes back to, so what's the matter? You've never seen a Babylonian
before? Yeah. You've never seen a Canaanite before? What's wrong with you? And I don't want to, you know, have you give it away, but what's the newest joke you tell?
Oh, I'll tell it, because this is such a, I love this joke so much that people, even to hear, when my wife hears it, even the second, a third, or fourth, and she still laughs. But it's a guy was attending a funeral. He walks up to the rabbi. He says, Rabbi, could you tell me the Wi-Fi password? The rabbi says, that's how you honor your dead mother? And the guy says, is that all lowercase?
Oh, my God. I'm going to steal that. With full B'Shem Omro attribution to you. That's too good. I want to thank Rabbi Bob Alper for a great visit here. It feels like we just got started. He will be here at Congregation Beit Simcha March 24th for a Purim for adults. We'll do some music. They'll be drinking, gambling, all the things Jews aren't really supposed to do except on Purim. Bob, where can people go to find out more about you more generally, besides coming to our website to buy tickets?
Okay, good. I'm happy to talk. I have a website. It's Bob Alper, just BOBALPER.com. People sometimes think my name is Alpert, and it used to be Alpert, but we dropped a T at a party in Boston. So if they go to BobAlpert.com, right there in the first page, they can just click and they'll get a 9-minute demo taken from a show I did down at the Villages in Florida back in November. And I'm very proud of it. It's a terrific demo. Hope people will look at it and share it with their friends and send it across the country and get a laugh out of it. And they come to your synagogue, they'll hear some of those very same jokes and they'll laugh again.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I want to note that Bob is donating his services. We're making a donation to an Israeli charity at this time of crisis. He's an incredible and generous and very funny guy. Thanks so much, Bob.
My pleasure. See you soon.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be journalist Warren Kozak, author of a valuable new memoir about coping with loss called Waving Goodbye. Please join us, Congregation Beit Simcha, each Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, in person and on our Facebook page, and sign up now. Purim for Grownups, featuring Rabbi Bob Alper, is next Sunday night at 6:30 p.m. By the way, Megillah reading, Saturday night at 7 p.m. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for tickets for Purim for Grownups. Our playout today for the upcoming holiday of Purim, this Saturday night and Sunday, comes from Michelle Citrin, a past guest of Too Jewish. Shake your grogger. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, a Chag Purim Sameach next Saturday and Sunday when we're here. And a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Shake it all in time. Work, work, work your grogger. Work your grogger right. Work, work, work your grogger. Work it all in time. Well, there was a guy named Haman. He tried to kill off the Jews. But thankfully, brave Esther saved us. She knew what to do with no time to lose. She jumped in the line. Put Tamas on, drink some
more. Okay, I believe you.
Jump in the line. Everything will be fine.
Okay, I believe you.
Jump in the line. Put your mask on, drink some
okay,
more.
Okay, I believe you.
Jump in the line, everything will be
okay,
fine. As you shake, shake, shake your grogger. Shake your grogger right. Shake, shake, shake your grogger. Shake it all in time. Work, work, work your grogger. Work your grogger right. Work, work, work your grogger. Work it all in time. Everyone's dressed up in costumes. We march around in parades. Cause us Jews, if you give us lemons, we'll make a lemonade. Jump in the line, put your mask on, drink some
okay,
wine.
I believe you.
Jump in the line, everything will be fine.
Okay, I believe you.
Jump in the line, put your mask on. shake your brother right. Shake, shake.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.